This is Earl Bergman, Society of American Baseball Research, and it's my pleasure to be interviewing Kurt Bleffery, who's in town in New York for the Yankee Old-Timers game. Kurt, I want to thank you for the time you're giving us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Okay, Kurt, we'd like to hear a little about your boyhood, where you were born and raised, and how you eventually got exposed to baseball.
Well, I was born in Brooklyn, 1943. I just celebrated 49th birthday. Don't know if we'll make 50, but I made 49 anyway.
You look in good shape today.
And my father worked for Bell Laboratories in New York, and we lived in Jackson Heights for a while. And I started the game when I was about 4 years old. It was post-war, and everything was at a commodity. And my mother got a broom for the household. And that was a cherished thing because she could keep the house clean,
Right.
So my dad went ahead and sawed the handle off it. So I had a bat.
We call it stickball. Right?
Well, not so much a stickball. We didn't bounce the ball or anything like that.
Okay.
What he did was I used to sit on the stoop, wait for him to come home every night from work, and we had a tennis ball, and I had my little stick out there, and he pitched to me. And I started out as a right-handed hitter, and he turned me around. And I thank God he did that, because it worked out good. When he came home, tired as he was, he always worked out with me, but I never gave him the bat. I always gave him the ball, because I wanted to hit.
Right.
Okay. And then we got out of Jackson Heights, and we moved to a town called Mahwah, New Jersey.
Okay.
And that's where I spent my youth, Mahwah.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up through the ranks like most kids do.
Right.
I had the God-given ability. I thank God every day for it, but I was overqualified, if you want to use the word that way. I had power over. As a little leaguer, as a sophomore in high school, I hit a 425-foot home run. So, God gave me the ability to play this game.
So you were in the Little League ball?
Oh, yeah, I played Little League. I came up through Little League, and then I went to Pony League.
Okay.
And then, right through the ranks, I played in the Pony League World Series in Springfield, Illinois,
right,
in 1960. And
you used as a pitcher.
No, the coach used to let me pitch the last high school game of the season, get it out of my system. I'd get shelled or something like that,
right,
and go back to third base and catch him where I played all the time.
Looking back at your Little League experience, some people are critical about Little League. Now, what was your experience looking back?
Back then, we used to go around with a tin cup and knock on people's doors to buy uniforms and stuff like that, which made it very homey because our town was only like 4,000 people. And it was very, very enjoyable back then. Everybody played. Everybody had a good time. Nowadays, kids got to wait in line to play, and you got to pay to play.
Okay.
And as we were mentioning, I am from Florida now, and you own property in Florida right now, and you will see that more and more as you go down.
Okay.
And that is really my pet peeve. It just gets me crazy because there's no way in the world that a kid in the United States of America should have to wait or pay to play this game.
Right.
And that's the problem that they're having down there. Now, I don't care if there's more kids, build more fields.
Right.
No.
So you found Little League a positive experience.
It was a definite launching pad.
Coaches were supportive and no pressure, et cetera. Because some people are awkward.
Not like it is today.
Right.
The pressure is, in fact, I'll tell you a little story. In between my marriages, when I was divorced, I was dating a girl in Toms River, New Jersey. And the people kept on asking me to come out and umpire and stuff like that. I said, I'd rather work with the kids with the hitting and stuff like that. That's my prowess. I'd rather work with the hitters,
Right.
Well, we need good umpires because these guys stink. I said, I know they stink, but So finally, I gave in and I umpired, all right? Well, it just happened that her son was in the league. So I made it one stipulation that I don't get any of his games. Don't give me any of his games. Well, it turned out, Murphy's Law. Very simple, Murphy's Law. I wound up with one of his games. I punched him out 3 times in one game. She locked me out of the house. So, where am I going with that, right? I punched him out. Now, it wasn't even marginal, and I don't believe in favoritism that way, but it was right down the chute. Bell high, cut the plate in half. Now, what am I going to call it, a ball?
Right, okay.
And I punched a kid out 3 times, and that was it. She locked me out of the house.
What positions did you play on the high school team?
High school, I was a catcher and third baseman.
Okay.
I made All-State 2 years in a row. In fact, Jim Ogle, who's our host here with the Yankees, Jim was a writer for the New York Star-Ledger, and I still credit him for making me All-State third. I made All-State third base instead of New Jersey as junior.
So Was that your preference, or?
I enjoyed catching.
You enjoyed catching, yeah, but they felt you were better at third.
Right, and I played first in college.
Right.
So, I mean, where am I going? I played every position in the big leagues except shortstop and pitch. Okay. I played every other position.
Just roughly, what kind of stats did you have in high school?
I hit over 600. Okay. I hit over 600. Right. In fact, a couple of years ago, they just did break, and I graduated in 1961. About 3 or 4 years ago, they finally broke my home run record at my high school in Mahwah.
Which was what?
Mahwah Junior
High School. I mean, what was your record?
I hit nine or ten home runs in like 14 games.
Okay, and I think you mentioned one of them was well over 20 feet.
No, that was more as a sophomore.
When you were a sophomore.
This was when I was a junior.
When did you begin to notice, I guess you began to be scouted after a while. When was that?
Well, I got scouted. I started, believe it or not, they started scouting me when I was in seventh grade.
Really?
I was, like I said, I had the exceptional talent that God gave me talent for.
I mean, so you're talking about that you were like 11, 12 years old?
I was more than that, more like 13. Okay. But I had tremendous power.
How big were you at that time?
I was 5'10".
Okay.
5'10", about 160 pounds, 150, 160 pounds. But my dad, who never played baseball, he was a track man. In fact, he ran in Olympic trials against Marty Glickman back in 1936.
Really?
And lost to him by 1/10 of a second.
And Marty Glickman made the team.
He made the team.
Right, yeah.
And what had happened was my father was a staunch person on fundamentals. I mean, he didn't want to know anything. And he taught me how to hold a bat.
Where did he get his knowledge from?
Just watching and being around people.
Oh, really?
You know, I mean, he played, but he didn't play for anything
that could
be professional.
Right.
You know, he grew up in Brooklyn.
Right.
And he told me how to turn my knuckles so they lined up this way so it wouldn't come across, you know, and how to get your hips and your arms and everything in the same motion to pop the ball. And it generated a tremendous amount of power for me because I was a strong kid anyway.
I got the impression you had a good relationship because I interviewed somebody once who said the pressure of his father, he actually had ulcers when he was 14 years old.
No, my dad never did that. My dad didn't push me. He even coached our little league team, you know, and there was no pressure.
So, like, if you didn't do well at a particular time,
get him another day.
Right.
Get him another day.
Do you have any brothers? Or?
No, two sisters.
Okay, were they involved with ball at all?
Yeah, both of them. My sister Carla was an all-state field hockey player.
Okay.
And my sister Linda was she ran track. So the whole family was
athletic,
you know.
Now, you were aware at this early age that you were being scouted?
I was in grammar school. I was in
a school. And you were aware of that?
Yeah, later on.
Oh, you weren't at the time?
Not at the time. They were just looking at me. Evidently, my high school coach had evidently gotten in touch with some organizations or some scouts and said, look, I've got a young kid here. He's not, you know, he's got to play through high school and home nine yards, but just take a look at him for future reference. I mean, this kid is hitting the ball over 350 feet, and he's only in seventh grade.
Right.
So they started looking at me, and, you know, I went through high school, and as soon as I got out of high school, here they came. You know, Honey Russell, who's with the Braves, he offered me $50,000 right there, right on the spot to sign
it. That was big money.
That was tremendous money.
Right.
You know, and I said, I says, you know, I want to go to college. I went to Wagner in Staten Island.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to see, I don't know how to put this so it doesn't sound like it's an ego trip,
but I wanted to see if
I was that good. As everybody told me I was that good. I wanted to see if I was that good. I wanted to play in the Metropolitan Commons.
This was sounded like your decision rather than your parents.
It was mine. It was mine to go to school.
Right.
But ironically enough, I went on a football scholarship.
Oh, boy.
So I played two sports in college, which upset my father tremendously. He was just ballistic on me, you know, as far as that went. You know, you've got a career in baseball, blah, 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 and the whole nine yards, you know.
Right.
And I didn't listen to him.
Which did you like better?
I liked football better.
You did?
I was a better football player.
Okay.
I was 228 pounds with a 33-inch waist.
And what?
Halfback.
Halfback.
Both ways, I thought.
Okay.
I loved it.
Okay.
But, you know, as time went on, you know, I wound up going to Wagner, and of course, the seniors, when I'm a freshman kid out of high school, you know, seniors go to you, whatever.
Right.
All right, kid, this is college, and I don't think you're going to be a whirlwind like you were in high school and stuff like that, because you've got a lot to learn and all the stuff like that. Well, we played, our opening game was in Dickinson, up in Pennsylvania, and the first time I touched the ball, I went 97 yards for a touchdown. I said, this game's easy. I said, yeah. But, of course, Wagner used a wall, because Mickey Sullivan, who used to be at North Carolina State, he was a wall. person, and you know, that's all you got to do is get behind
the
ball.
So freshman could play varsity.
Oh yeah,
yeah, okay,
right. Because at what time? So as it turned out, I played varsity football. I got hurt the last play of the game, of the last game.
Oh, boy.
I got a hip pointer.
Uh-huh.
So it healed, okay. And then we went on to bigger and better things. Then we started playing baseball.
Okay.
And
what position did
you? I played first base.
First base.
Yeah, I played first base.
They knew you were a
prowess
in third also.
Yeah, they knew I could play all
of them. But I guess they had somebody at third already.
The guy that played first, well, they had a guy at third base, and they also had a guy at first base that graduated.
Okay.
So I walked right into it. You know, I was going to play regardless. It didn't make any difference. You know, I was going to play. And, geez, I'll never forget it. I think I was 2 percentage points from leading the nation in hitting.
What was your average?
Last 471, whatever. And it was the last game of the season. And I had to go 3 for 4 to go. And I was 2 for 3. Well, the last game of the season. 2 for 3, and I come up with the bases loaded.
So one more hit would have done it.
Right. Come up with the bases. Oh, I was going to get that hit because this guy didn't have garbage. And so now they're down. And the bases were loaded, and we were playing CCNY, and they had a 2-run lead. And they walked me intentionally.
Really?
The bases loaded. Forced in a run. The next guy popped up, and the game was over.
Okay.
Unbelievable.
Right.
So I went ahead and said to myself, okay, now I think I'm ready. I think I'm ready now, okay. So we took our final exam. They couldn't talk to you until the finals were over of college. That was the rule back then.
Right.
Okay. Well, Hank Majeski was waiting for me outside the game auditorium.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And he came home. He followed me home. We were living in New Shrewsbury, New Jersey, down by Red Bank. He followed me home.
Uh-huh.
All right. He was with the Dodgers at the time.
Okay, sure.
And he offered me $8,000 to serve, okay, which wasn't what they were offering most people. You know?
Right.
Well, my father said, look, why don't you just go ahead and go home?
Right.
Because the kid ain't signing for $8,000, and that's it, because I let him do all the negotiating. All right. Well, this was about 5 o'clock again.
Now, I thought after high school, you were there offering $50,000.
They offered me $50. Honey Russell offered me $50. So he wanted to offer me $8. Right?
Yeah, I mean, and I assume that you told him. Right, yeah.
Well, we go ahead and I have a supper, you know. Try, in lieu of being rude, my mother says, come on, Hank, sit down, have dinner. He's on the phone back and forth to Los Angeles like a drunken sailor.
Right.
I mean, like every 2 minutes, like there's a direct line in there.
Right.
The kid ain't budging. They ain't budging.
Right.
So got to be about 8 o'clock at night. I called this girl up I was going out with. She says, you want to go to a movie? We got home about 3 o'clock in the morning. He's still there. He's still there going back and forth to L.A. Finally he left. And that was the end of that. And then Dale Jones of Philadelphia.
Which he didn't come up over 8,000.
He couldn't. He wasn't allowed to. His hands were tied.
Right, okay.
He got the word out of corporate. You know, that was it.
Right.
So Dale Jones, I went to Philadelphia, and I had a good experience there. And that was another $8,000 deal. And then I went to work out at Shea Stadium. And Larry Bernard pitched at St. John's University, was their big man, who I played against in college.
Yeah.
Because he went to St. John's, I went to Wagner.
I hear he's going to be with the Colorado Rockies.
He might very well be.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I hit him over the roof 3 times.
Okay.
All right. And that was like a $15,000, $18,000 offer.
What's not clear to me is why did they go from $50,000?
They didn't. This was Honey Russell.
That was the year before, right?
Right. This
well,
was
what made things drop from 50,000?
Because they were trying to hold them down because of the new protection rules. They had to carry you on that roster.
Oh, okay.
See, that's how I got to Baltimore.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
So, finally, to make a long story short, the Yankees came across with what I wanted, plus my education.
Okay.
So, and I always wanted to play for the Yankees anyway, because that stadium was built for me.
Okay.
So, we signed with the Yankees. And my dad told me, he says, I know your money's burning a hole in your pocket. Go out and get a car.
How much were we talking about?
We're talking $50,000. We'll show $50,000.
Okay.
Plus my education.
Right.
And he says, go get a car. He says, put $1,000 in your pocket. And he says, give me the rest. Okay. He worked for AT&T.
Right.
Okay.
You mentioned that.
So AT&T stock at that time was $135 a share.
Okay.
And he, being an employee, could buy it for $85.
Right.
So what he was going to do is he was going to buy $45,000 worth of AT&T stock.
Uh-huh.
Well, of course, as I got older, my father got smarter. See, I was a 17-year-old kid, wouldn't listen.
Right.
Wouldn't listen.
Right.
Well, that's why I try to convey this message to all the young kids, you know, dad's been there, you know, listen to him.
I'm going to play this tape back to my kid.
Let him listen to it. That's right. Good. Whatever it works. Right. Whatever if it works.
I have good kids.
And I wouldn't listen. I wouldn't listen to him. So as it turned out, you know, I can just squander the money. I bought homes. And, of course, my divorce came into play. And
right.
I got out of baseball prematurely. Right. And I had no money. So since 1973.
Well, if we could wait and go back. And then, if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about, you know, more recent things. But we left off where the Yankees signed you.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happened? Right, what happens now?
The Yankees signed me, and they signed me the same time the Mets signed Ed Cranfield.
Okay, so this was
1962.
Okay.
Okay, so Eddie went right to the big leagues, and I went to Greensboro. They gave me a choice. Frank Rossetti was working me out.
Right.
They gave me a choice and said, look, this is June.
All right. This is when the Yankees had Mantle and Harris and
all that. Right. And they said, you have a choice. You can just go back and play in the summer league if you want to or whatever, you know, and come to spring training next February, or we'll send you away. I said, get me out of here. So they sent me to Greensboro, North Carolina. What a gorgeous
city. What level is that?
Well, that was B-ball. Okay. See, we had the classifications then. It wasn't AAA or AAA. It was DCBA, AA, AAA, big leagues.
Okay, so that was
B. It was a B-league. It was Carolina League. It was an excellent league. Excellent.
That's a nice jump for somebody right on cost.
Yeah, and they were paying me $800 a month salary,
okay,
which was a lot of money.
Right.
Okay. Well, again, to make a long story short, first time I went to the plate in Carolina League, it was my mother's birthday, July 3rd. I'll never forget it, 1962. First pitch they threw me out of the seats. Goodbye. I said, this is an easy game.
And what position were you playing?
Playing the outfield.
Because you're in the outfield.
Yeah, right field.
Okay, is this your first time ever in the outfield?
Yeah, as a rule. I hated the outfield, so no action.
Okay.
So, I went on, I joined the club in June, and I went on to catch the team leader in home runs before the end of the season.
Hmm. And how much was that? How many?
13. I had 13 home runs. And, you know, they only played June, July, and August.
Right.
So, in fact, it was July. I joined the team July 3rd.
What would what's your average at that time?
Oh, 289.
Nice average.
Yeah, I hit the ball good. I didn't learn the strike zone until, about my second or third year in organized baseball. I'd swing at anything. Throw it up there.
How about the curveball?
I could hit the curveball. I could
fight the curveball. Fastball.
I was a dead fastball hitter, but I'd fight the curveball.
Okay.
If you can throw me three in a row
right.
on the black, you
right.
got me.
Right.
Okay, I'll
right.
give you credit for that.
Right.
I used to sit on that fastball.
Right.
You know, he's going to do it.
Okay.
I try to drum this in the kids' heads as they listen about hitting. Every time you go to the plate, you are going to get your pitch at least one time. Now, what you choose to do with it is your business.
Right.
If you foul it back or you're not ready for it or whatever, then that's your problem. All right?
So
but
you're
going to get it one time.
You were looking for that fastball.
Oh, yes. Okay. Down and in. And I'd get it once. You know, once I didn't execute every time.
Okay.
But at least I didn't get cheated either.
What would you say about the coaching? Let's say at the college level and the B level. No, looking back.
Well, we had a coach in college. Herbie White was his name. New York City fireman.
Mm-hmm.
He was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
He played a little bit minor league ball, but he was really excellent. He knew how to work with kids. He knew how to motivate guys.
Right.
My first manager was Vern Rapp. Mm-hmm. Vern Rapp scared the living hell right out of you.
Well, I'm talking about at the minor league level.
Minor league level was good, but he'd scare you.
You did learn.
Oh yeah,
the fundamentals.
Well, the Yankee organization had Grovers all over the place. I mean, if you had a problem with hitting, Wally Moses was right there.
Right.
I mean, he was right down there.
Great.
You know, if you had problems, you know, Jim Turner would be down there if you had a problem with pitching, you know. They wouldn't let their minor league ball players that they got money invested in, like Jake Gibbs.
Right.
All right. They wouldn't let these guys go by the wayside. I mean, they gave Jake $125,000 to sign. They want him in the big leagues.
Right.
They want their money back.
Yeah, right. Could you remember any particular thing they contributed to your knowledge of the game? Was it physical, mental stuff, or a little bit of both?
They just try to make me hit strikes, swing strikes.
Okay.
But the funny thing is that I don't think you're going to ever remember this. But there was a Yankee ball player. He was from Oklahoma. He was an Indian. His name was Danny Oak. They signed him when he was 16 years old. And they brought him. He was in Greensboro. And he was strong as an ox.
Yeah.
But everything he hit was straight up in the air. So it tells you he's dropping his back shoulder.
Yeah.
So the Yankees gave him 60. So they definitely want him up here.
Right.
And they go ahead and send Wally Moses down.
Yeah.
All right. Now I'm hitting 324.
Yeah.
And Wally looks at me in the batting cage and says, I know what you're doing wrong. What do you mean you know what I'm doing wrong? I'm hitting 324. I'm not doing anything wrong, you know, but
that's interesting.
I listened because I was in awe. I was only a young kid, and who am I to say that maybe I am doing something wrong?
Right, right.
Well, in 2 weeks, I was at 287. Listen to him.
What did he tell you to do? Change his
name? He had me. I used to lift my foot like a lot.
Okay.
And it was a timing device. That's all it was a timing device.
Apparently it worked.
Well, it worked, yeah. He'd stop me from doing it.
Uh-huh.
So, you know. And, you know, but
so the moral of the story is,
you know, you got to listen if you're doing something wrong. You know, I mean, if you're doing something wrong, and you know, you got to know what it is. You know, and you got to. Nowadays they take videotapes of you. And back then, you know, you had to be watched. You could find out what you're doing. You know, but I always give advice to the kids. You know, I says, always have your videotapes taken when you're hitting. When you're hitting well, don't have them taken when you're hitting crappy because you can't find out what you're doing wrong.
That's what they do today.
Yeah. So it turned out good, and then Frank Verde was my manager in the second year in Greensboro.
Okay.
I got hurt in spring training. I got spiked.
Okay.
And I had to go back down there. Now, I'm on a 25-man roster with New York, in 1963.
That was part of the signing.
That's part of the deal. That's why they try to get you for the, you know, the money.
Right.
And the Yankees are playing with 24 guys and me.
Right.
And I'm in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Right.
So they got into late April. And they decided they needed that 25th man.
Could I ask you, before you continue, was this your first time away from home when you went down to Greensboro?
No. I played in the World Series in Springfield, Illinois.
For extended period of time.
Yeah, that was my first time away.
What was that like?
It was scary, but I had some good roommates, Mel Stottlemyre being one.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, Tony Presbyshin, and Butchie Cotera, and Danny O. We all roomed together. We had a big 5-bedroom house for $175 a month. And I was a good cook.
Right.
I left my Italian mother to, you know, to cook.
Right.
So they paid my rent just so I'd cook them all good home-cooked meals, you know.
Most of the games were night games then? Or?
Oh, yeah, most of the games were night games. But I'd make a roast beef and brown gravy, you know, so you got to heat it up. And you go, any moron can turn on a pot of gravy.
So what do in the daytime? Just hang around?
Hang out. You know, the guys like to eat before. Like Mel, when he was pitching, he'd have to eat like 4 o'clock in the afternoon before the games.
Right.
You know? So I was good to cooking for him.
Think of anything particular upon you, any horseplay that happened that you sort of look back on today?
It's funny. Yeah. Mel wasn't a drinker.
Okay.
Stottlemyre wasn't a drinker. And he had gone out and won like 8 consecutive games in a row, like 6 by shutouts. And he got into that ninth one. He didn't get out in the first inning. They hit everything he threw. He was so mad. He goes ahead and he drank a 6-pack of beer that night. And we had some peach brandy in the house, whatever, without sugar in there. I'll never know.
Right.
He drank a little bit of that.
Right.
Then he had a peanut butter sandwich. And about half an hour later, he's in the bathroom throwing his gloves up. He got sick as a dog. Because we're only kids, you know.
Sure. What were you, 19?
Yeah, 18.
Yeah, right. 18. Okay, 18.
And Mel comes out of the bathroom and says, that damn peanut butter will get you every time.
I think as a pitching coach today, he has to have one.
Well, he was a great pitcher.
Yeah,
he's like a Whitey Ford to me.
So you weren't surprised that he's went into pitching coach?
No,
you could see that all the time.
Like I said, he's like a Whitey Ford to me. If you had one game to win, all the marbles, he'd be the one I'd want to have.
Right, right.
Because he's not going to come out with any of this marble money. Bohurts,
well,
you know, these guys today. I've never in my life seen so many guys on a disabled list.
Well, must be doing something right. I mean, he's with the Mets, they're changing managers.
He's a real pro.
Right. So you had some good guys to hang out with. The off the field stuff wasn't good. Now you were talking about your second year in the minors.
Yeah, that's when I went back to Greensboro. I went back to Greensboro because I got hurt in spring training.
Right.
And it was a situation where there was, you know, there was a problem. Like I said, they needed that 25th spot.
Right.
So I was still recouping from that. I got like 12 stitches in my leg.
Hmm.
I blocked home plate without shin guards.
Uh-huh.
When I was a kid, I didn't know any better. He didn't score.
Okay.
He did not score. He was not going to score.
Okay.
So I was still recouping about another week.
Right.
And they put me on waivers. They figured that they would sneak me through because, you know, they put me on waivers in order to sign me to a AAA contract.
Okay.
All right, that was the
reason. Get you off that roster.
Get me off that major league roster. Sneak me through and still be there properly.
Right.
Well, I got claimed by every club except the Washington Senators. Are you ready for that? The team that stunk up the whole league didn't claim me.
Uh-huh.
Baltimore claimed me first.
Okay.
I was so upset and so mad that my dream was gone. I called my father up. I said, well, come on.
You mean, now, how did it work then? They couldn't recall the waivers once?
No.
Once
that was it. Irrevocable.
Okay.
All right. Once you put on that waiver list, whoever grabs you owns you.
In other words, they didn't expect that to happen, obviously.
My dream was shattered. I wanted to play in the Yankee uniform.
Right, right.
All right? And
I mean, they didn't expect to lose you.
No, they thought they could sneak him through because, you know, he's limping, he's not walking correctly, he might not ever make it, you know, you're going to take a chance on him because they have to put you right on their roster.
Okay.
So, Baltimore claimed it. I called my father up. I said,
now they had first shot because what, they were
evidently allowed? They had first shot at me.
Yeah, for whatever reason. Okay.
So I called my father up and said, come home. I'm through with this rotten game. I'm not playing anymore.
Okay.
But we talked on the phone about 3 hours that night. Look, what they want you to do? They said, well, Baltimore called and they said they'd worked the deal out since you had already unpacked and you were there and you got roommates and everything like that. They'll give you the choice. If you want to get out of the Yankee organization completely, they'll send you to Aberdeen, South Dakota.
Okay.
Or that you can stay and play in Greensboro as Baltimore property on a loan.
Okay.
Says, I don't want to go from B to C, number one, because I have C league.
Oh, Aberdeen is C.
Yeah, and it's also cold as hell.
You're going to step down. Right?
So, my father said, make them pay. Stay there and make them pay. So, I stayed. And from the time I came back in late April, beginning of May, to the time I was recalled in the first week of August, I had 29 months.
Wow.
If I'd have stayed there, I'd have beat Emo Shafferty's 47-year-old record. 47-year-old record.
Wow.
I mean, I was on fire. And, of course, George Fister was the general manager of the Greensboro Club at the time. He's now with the commissioner's office.
Wow.
And he had to send a report back to New York every night on what the kid was doing, right?
Still playing the outfield?
But playing first base then.
Oh, you still, that's right, first base.
And then George had just put on a report. He had another one. He had two more, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then Elmira got in trouble. Earl Weaver was the manager of Elmira in the Pioneer League. And Eastern League in Elmira, New York, which was AA.
Right.
And they were in trouble and needed some power. So Baltimore had the right, and they recalled me.
Right.
They recalled me and sent me to Elmira.
Right.
And I finished up the season there. Dick Estell was pitching for Springfield.
Right.
Frank Lindsay was pitching for the San Francisco franchise. Right. You know, they had good ball players now.
Sure.
But the ballparks were humongous. Just, you needed a bazooka to shoot one out of Elmira. I had one home run in about 3 weeks there.
You were stinging the ball about it.
I was stinging the ball, but the thing was, it was just huge, and the ball didn't carry.
How about Greensboro? I mean, what were the fences there?
It was short.
Okay.
But you still got to tag it, you know.
Okay.
Durham was short.
Okay.
Now, that's where Rusty Staub and Joe Morgan came up for Durham.
Okay.
They were pounding them. That's when Joe hit 8 home runs in 8 days when he first came there. Yeah.
Okay. It was a short fence, but those were legitimate shots.
Oh, yeah. You got to crush it.
And what was it like in Elmira? How many feet are we talking about?
About 345 or 350 down the lines.
Okay. Down the lines.
Yeah. You got to crank it. And the ball didn't carry.
Right. You know? Right. Right.
So, I played there.
Still at first base?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we could put you at first base. And I came home, I had a good
By the way, what was your impression of Weaver, your first impression?
When you were a kid, man. It's crazy, but he was a good manager.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had our differences, you know, but they're now buried, you know, we buried our differences.
Right, right.
But I was just too overzealous. I wanted to play every day, you know.
Okay.
Earl, my problem started when he took over the manager's job in 1968, Baltimore, at All-Star Break. That's when we had our problems.
Okay, but as a kid at that level?
Well, he was nutty as a fruitcake.
Okay, you want to give us one example?
Stan House would be pitching, you know. He said, this is a two-cigarette inning. You know, he'd smoke two Paul Malls in an inning because Dan House couldn't throw the ball over the plate. He'd walk everybody but the peanut vendor.
Okay. And then, what about his baseball knowledge?
I was a very smart guy. Extremely good.
Busy about it,
right. He fainted on the mound one day, trying to get down by his sympathy.
Oh, you mean fake?
Yeah. It was unbelievable. He stole third. He took third base right out of the ground in Charleston, West Virginia, and walked in the clubhouse with it.
Okay.
We had a guy who was a legend. All right. The guy's name was Steve Dalkowski. Little short Polish guy.
110 mile an hour fastball.
He would throw strawberry through a battleship.
Yeah. You faced him?
He was on my team.
Oh, he was on your team.
And he actually stood 10 feet away from a wood fence in Elmira and shattered the damn plank.
Yeah.
That's how hard he threw, okay?
Yeah.
But he couldn't throw the ball so
over
the plank. 1963, he had the ball in my club, Nate.
Yeah.
How, that's when the Yankees had their power, you know, their dynasty, you know. And how told the Yankee starters, Pepitone, Tresh, you know, Elston Howard, Mantle, Maris, you guys go anywhere near that plate when he's pitching, he says, I'll fine you $1,000.
Yeah.
And he struck out 11 Yankees. All right.
Yeah, he was like a legend. I don't think he ever made it to the top.
But he popped his elbow at that game. Hurt his elbow. And he wound up in Elmira and blah, blah, blah.
Was he receptive to instruction, do you remember? Or
Dapple was our... Dapple liked to spend a lot of money. All right.
Okay.
So the organization was instructed to send his paycheck home with his mother.
Okay.
And she's in the house.
Okay.
But Duke Sims was here.
Yeah.
All right. Duke used to get on with Earl sometimes. He'd get on with
How old was he?
Well, Duke was young. Duke was playing for Charleston, West Virginia. Right?
I mean, but, oh, okay.
Duke couldn't have been any more than 18.
But he was a gutsy kid?
Oh, yeah. A good catcher and stuff like that. But he used to get on Weaver something terrible.
Yeah, okay.
One night in Charleston, Duke was all over. Johnny Lipton was the manager.
Uh-huh.
Earl got up and pops up his dugout and said, Duke, if you don't shut up, I'm going to walk Dalkowski. Clamped him right up. Didn't say another word. Because Dalko was just, he was just terrible.
Yeah.
If he hit you, he'd kill you.
Yeah.
That's how hard
I read that.
And he had the big Coke bottle glasses and he couldn't see home plate.
I've read what people said he's faster than Ryan and
Oh, yeah. I think he probably threw the hardest of anybody
that
ever played
home plate. So how did you end up that year? You didn't have any home runs, but...
I had two. I wound up with 31 home runs.
But your average was?
Stayed right around 270.
Okay.
It was crazy. It was there.
Okay.
And then we went to following year with spring training.
At Elmira?
No. I went to Big Camp.
Baltimore. Oh, okay.
I had a health spring.
Okay.
I had a good spring. In fact, I was the last one to go.
Who was on the Oro Hill roster?
Boog, okay. Brooks, Johnny Osino, Jerry Adair, Lucio.
So you've got some big...
We've got some big boys there. So, he goes ahead and Hank calls me in his office. About 2 days of break. Kid.
This is Hank.
Hank Bauer. Who I think is the best manager.
He was the manager. I
loved
him. I spoke to him also.
Loved
him. Yeah.
Well, Hank says you got to go.
Okay.
I know you're a kid.
Right.
So that was the year 1964 where the Orioles almost won a pennant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is when Sam Bowens, who had 22 home runs, didn't win rookie of the year because a guy named Lever was a rookie too.
Yeah, what, the Yankees win by one game or something?
Something like that.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, Boog ran into the wall in left field at Fenway Park and cracked his wrist. So we were in Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
And Daryl Johnson told myself and Lou Jackson.
Richmond was Class A, that was the
Triple A.
Yeah, that was the top farm too.
Right. That was the top farm club. Yankee.
Right.
Okay. And he said, he got myself and Lou Jackson, who's since passed on,
mm-hmm.
go back to your rooms,
mm-hmm.
and neither one of you order food up on the club. And all that. And I just said, one of you two is going from the ball.
Wow.
So needless to say, I was wrecked, right? So as it turned out, Lou went, because Lou had previous major league experience and they were going for the pennant. They didn't think I could handle the pressure, okay? Which I can understand.
Okay.
I think so. Okay. Well, Lou went, was supposed to join the club in Boston. He went from Richmond, Virginia via Detroit to visit one of his girlfriends before he got there. So he got there 3 days late.
You're kidding.
So needless to say, he joined the big club and they sent put right back on the plane, so it's back.
Yeah. Was that typical of him? Was he sort of a flaky guy? Or?
I never knew him that way.
Yeah, right,
exactly.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I didn't know, you know, I expected if you got called to the big leagues, you'd want to go to the big leagues and get your, you know, get your ass up there and play.
Yeah, right.
And they called you up because they need you. They didn't call you up to sit on the bench.
Yeah, they had guys driving all night. And so,
right.
You know, right.
So I had a hell of a year in Rochester. I had 33 home runs. Mac Jones was in the league. Duke Carmel, you know. The three of us led the league in homers that year, you know. Mac and I were tied all year long. He came to Rochester for one game, you know, towards the middle of the year, towards the second third of the year. He came up to me and said, "Ben, we were good friends, still are." One of us is leading this ballpark tonight, leading this league in home runs. I want you to know that. It's the first time he got up, he had one of the clocks in the field. I said, "Okay." I'll come up the first time I hit him. All right. Next time he's up, he'd hold the clock again. Then he hold the next time, he'd hold the clock.
Really?
Never look back.
Really?
He had 49 that year.
Wow.
He had 49, Duke hit 36, and I hit 33.
And what size ballpark are you talking about?
Well, it was a good size ballpark. Exactly. Well, Rochester, center field, where he hit over the clock, but blast.
Right.
No, right field was about 320 down the line.
Right.
You know, no big enough tear out, you know.
Right.
You had to hit it.
Right.
You know, you weren't going to get any free,
right.
You know. So I had a hell of a year at Rochester. I had 290 with 91 ribbies and 33 home runs.
Apparently you were playing your first, I mean, was that much of an adjustment to you, playing first base?
No.
Apparently it didn't affect your hitting.
Didn't affect me at all.
Yeah. Because sometimes,
you know, and I had a good teacher when I got to AAA with Joe Altobelli.
Okay.
You know, he was such a gentleman about it. We used to go out to dinner together and go out and have a few drinks together after the game was over.
Right.
And here he's trying to get back to the big leagues.
Sure.
He relinquishes his spot so I could go.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he could have been surly, he could have been snotty, he could have been nasty, you know, the whole nine yards, but he did, and he helped.
Yeah.
I mean, he made me a damn good defensive first baseman.
Okay. So, when Lou Johnson didn't report...
Jackson.
Lou Jackson, I'm sorry. So what happened?
They just went ahead, and I don't know who else they called up.
Right.
Earl Robinson.
Okay.
They called Earl Hardack.
Okay, and how did that happen? You went to spring training?
I had a teammate before I went.
Oh, okay, you sort of knew that.
I had a teammate before.
So now we're talking about 1965. What do you remember about your first game?
I wasn't starting.
Okay.
And I had my mouth flat. All right, I was mad as hell I wasn't playing, but I, you know, I was supposed to take bones. As an outcome. I've been brought up as an outfielder now.
All right,
because Boog's on first.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So I'm mad as hell.
Right.
And I said,